Sinisterhood is brought to you by Progressive Insurance.
Fiscally responsible financial geniuses, monetary magicians. These are things people say about drivers who switch their car insurance to Progressive and save hundreds.
Because Progressive offers discounts for paying in full, owning a home, and more. Plus, you can count on their great customer service to help you when you need it, so your dollar goes a long way.
Visit Progressive.com to see if you could save on car insurance.
Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Potential savings will vary. Not available in all states or situations.
Now more than ever, Lowe's knows you don't just want a low price, you want the lowest price. And with our lowest price guarantee, you can count on us for competitive prices on all your home improvement projects. If you find a qualifying lower price somewhere else on the same item, we'll match it. Lowe's, we help, you save. Price match applies to same item, current price at qualifying retailers. Exclusions and terms apply. Learn how we'll match price at Lowe's.com/lowest price guarantee.
Content warning. This episode contains discussions of child marriage, domestic violence, and brief mentions of animal abuse and the loss of a child. Listener discretion is advised. A small town in the northwest corner of Missouri, where nothing ever happens, became the focus of international attention when an unbelievable crime was committed, seemingly with the whole town's approval. But the target in the slaying had a long and terrifying history that left some spectators wondering whether he may have had it coming. This week's episode is The Killing of Ken Rex McElroy, Part 1.
A bump in the night, your heart fills with dread. Probably a murderer who wants you dead. It could be a ghost, a demon, or worse. Perhaps you're the victim of a witch's curse. It's hopeless, you're doomed, you'd call a priest if you could. You'd rather just listen to who? Sinisterhood.
I'm gonna kill you.
This is one of those stories that I believe the author, Harry MacLean, who wrote the book In Broad Daylight, said it sort of takes on like this mythical status, where if you kind of say, you ever heard of that case where the town came together and people are like, oh, I remember whatever happened in that. Well, that is what the next three episodes are about.
It's quite interesting how the focus of the documentary, No One Saw a Thing, and the story you might just hear upon first blush of like, how could an entire town not say anything about a man being shot in broad daylight? And then you hear about all of the things that led up to that point.
Mm-hmm.
And I said, I could see how it would happen.
Mm-hmm. I was, a wise, wise woman once said, we exist in the context of everything that came before us. And so to hear like a town ganged up on this person who was a bully, I was like, I would like to raise my hand. I have a couple of issues with several of the words you used. And I think you'll see the framing of this story and how it has changed over time, framing behaviors before the killing of Ken Rex McElroy. It's in the name. You know, he gets, spoiler alert, he gets killed. But how, by whom, and why are the big questions. To hear, except for Harry MacLean, who is a lawyer and an author, some of the coverage of this, the descriptions, especially of all the crimes we're going to talk about today, were, they were kind of a hand wave of like, well, that's
little
just how people.
A little dialed down, a little yes. Lukewarm for how hot they actually were.
Yeah. And if you ask me, you know, how would you describe this? I would say, well, I do have the benefit of being in 2024 versus 1964. And I think because of that reason, it's important that we look back on this as women who are covering this, which is a different perspective than some of the articles I've read. I think that the book In Broad Daylight is done very empathetically and done very well. And in fact, does do this very well. But a lot of just sort of the facial coverage of it was very much like, he was a bully. People just kind of didn't like him. So I don't know. Put that in your head as we talk about all the shit he did today.
Bully is putting it mildly. I believe one of the other townsfolk referred to him as a rural terrorist. So
that's the way. Yeah.
That's a little more on the nose. Bully is, you know, when you hear the word bully, you think of like a 12-year-old kid on the playground. This guy. Yeah. Was a monster, and yeah. For decades.
Right, yeah, Ken Rex McElroy is a bully in that the Chicago Fire was just like, it got a little out of hand. Like, No. Yeah. It like destroyed a city. Like mm-hmm. this person was not like, you tell me if you were like a bully, you know, a bully, that's the type of person that burns down the schoolhouse, bulldozes the entire place and then beats the shit out of everyone inside of it. You'd be like, oh yeah, bully. That's what you mean. It's like, no, you meant the kid that took somebody's lunch money. Two different yeah. things. Two different words.
No. The other one is a criminal and a murderer and a rapist and
sex predator, psychopath. Yeah.
A lot of other things to add to that resume. So we will be covering it for 3 episodes. I know everyone likes to know how many is it yes. going to be, so you can save them up if you do that. So this one's going to be 3 because honestly, this guy has done so much heinous shit that it mm-hmm. can't be covered unless this was a 6-hour episode
right?
in one show.
It truly is. And I was thinking, you know, we were talking about this. We're like, we can't ask y'all as listeners to make a decision. Like, do you think this was moral? Do you think this was right? How do you feel about it? If you don't have the context of who this person was and what they did, because if I just came up to someone and was like, listen, here's the scenario. Here's what happened. You'd be like, I don't know. That sounds kind of bad. But once you have all the details, I think you can draw your own conclusions mm-hmm. like we all have. But this takes us back to Missouri, where we just recently were, just 100 miles north of Kansas City. So we were just in this area very recently, and we did not make it up to Skidmore. We drove south to Oklahoma City. But shout out to all of our Missouri listeners. We know there are many of you, and we cover a lot of things from your state. So
we do. And unfortunately, this one is not a good one. I wouldn't want to claim this guy, but that doesn't mean that the good people of Missouri have anything to do with it. He wasn't
not
even born there, so whatever.
No. Yeah. He interloper, you ain't even from here. You moved here for real. But I think getting back to Missouri, I would want to go back to Kansas City and maybe not Skidmore, as you hear. It sounds like the folks there have had enough of people poking around and
they don't want any, and
ready
to
move
that.
On.
Yeah. A small town that's inundated with like media. People live in small towns because they don't want that. They don't want the mm-hmm. hustle and bustle of the city bullshit. And it, mm-hmm. when the city bullshit comes to them, it doesn't go well usually.
You know, you big slick, big city journalist. But I mean, for real, and why are they there? And what is the purpose of them being there for sure? So,
well, what is the purpose of us being in San Diego in just how many days? 2 weeks now?
Oh my gosh, so soon. So I'm soon. So excited. We must book our flights. We'll be there. We will be there for our Full Moon Energy Tour. If you're not aware of what that is, I'm sure you are, but it is our traveling show that we don't release in the main feed of the podcast. We wrote it specifically to be performed live. There's visual elements, and it's all surrounding the dark side of the moon, what it does to us, what lurks up there, and what people really think happened during the Apollo missions. Was it aliens? Yes. Come learn more. We have like legend, lore, mysterious, macabre, all the stuff you love
true
about
crime.
Oh yeah,
cryptids, we bring in mm-hmm. interactive segments that are always a hit.
Some local, custom made local segments that change at every city. So come see your local legends: San Diego, September 17th; Phoenix, September 18th; and Las Vegas, September 19th. And then we're ending it here in Dallas with the hometown show in October.
October 17th. And I also like that you called it a traveling show, because now yes. I feel like we're hey, everybody, come and see the show. And we got to perform tricks out of our wagon.
Aren't we a little bit? We drag a suitcase and I open it and pull a puppet out of it. So yeah. I think it's pretty similar.
Get it's, your tickets, folks. All that's changed is like brands and technology. But the show is, we might as well have snake oil in the bag. Yeah.
Back in the day, they used wagons. Now we use Away check luggage. So thanks, Away. Not a sponsor, but should be, because we love that shit. For all the details, including dates, times, venues, and more, visit sinisterhood.com/live shows.
Well, I'm Christy.
I'm Heather.
And let's get into it. Martin Skidmore founded his namesake town of Skidmore, Missouri, around 1870 with the establishment of a railroad depot along the flat expanse in the northwestern part of the state. When a grist mill was built, the tiny town 100 miles north of Kansas City became a proper community. Folks worked together to create a home for themselves and their families. Tragically, a dark event in 1931 ripped through the community when a white school teacher was killed while working in her classroom after school. The suspect was a local black man named Raymond Gunn, who had been previously convicted of assault on a female student. The sheriff at the time drove Gunn through a crowd of townsfolk on the way to the arraignment at the courthouse. Town historian Tom Carneal told interviewers and no one saw a thing.
He delivered the man to the mob, that's all I can say.
The angry mob that had gathered pulled Gunn from the car. They lynched Raymond Gunn on the roof of the schoolhouse, which they then burned down while the entire town watched. No one was charged.
And this is a significant incident, I think, for the town, because as you stand around and watch all that happen, explicitly you see what is perhaps an extremely misguided attempt for justice, but implicitly it's, there are more of us than you and we decide what is done, regardless if the sheriff's involved or not.
It's a mob mentality, for sure, and we've talked in several episodes, especially in smaller towns, it's a lot of times the police are not in charge. The mm-hmm. town folk kind of make the rules, and it's like the Wild Wild West. And the cops are almost a facade because everybody right. takes matters into their own hand. And if they feel like justice has not been served, then the vigilantes commune and take it into their own hands.
Yeah.
3 years later, and 100 miles south, in the state of Kansas, Ken Rex McElroy was born in 1934. Born the 15th of 16 children, the McElroys were a poor migrant tinning farming family who often struggled to put food on the table for all of the kids. At an early age, Ken learned he had to fight for his place and his share. He loved animals, however, his abusive father saw this as a weakness. On one occasion, McElroy Sr. demanded his son commit an act of abuse against an animal. When Ken refused, he was beaten. His father's abusive reign eventually won out, and Ken took not only to hurting animals, but people as well.
And I think his role being the 15th of 16 children, he had a little brother after him, and they were, while they were both, I think, abused by his father, you know, just the violence kind of that comes along with that, like, toughen up, you're a farm kid yeah. kind of thing that we recognize now as very harmful. But also being the 15th of 16th and his younger brother, they were kind of like, we don't want to do like farm stuff. Like mm-hmm. we're not trying to like work super hard, because they were a little bit more spoiled. I mean, granted, they still had to and like have their place at the table. But when you're kind of the little kid and you're like, I kind of want to do my own thing. And that impetus will take you very far, like at any cost. I want to do what I want to do.
Number one kid in that family. Boy, did they must have had it hard.
Yeah.
Raising all the ones, or at least helping to raise the ones after. And
certainly.
16 kids is a ton. That's for any family, that's, even if you have money, it's like, there's only so much time someone can spend with a child in a day. And if you're splitting that between 16 kids, you're not getting seen by your parents a lot. And then when you do have that interaction, your dad is also abusive, and so you probably steer clear of him so you don't have to interact with him much.
For sure. And I'm sure you're seen sort of as like, oh, another worker for the farm. Good.
Yeah.
Come to work now. Come and do your share. Because that was the other thing, is he had kind of a chip on his shoulder being this like poor family, being the tenant farmer. So you're not really the landowner. You're just the worker. And kind of like, I want to be seen as better, but I don't really want to have to work to do it.
Yeah. He took a lot of umbrage with people looking down on him and his family because they were poor. And at a very young age, just started to really have a problem with people that thought they were better than him. And when that kind of, in those formative years, like, is shaping your worldview, it's not hard to see, when we get to the end of everything, how it led up to that. He kind of didn't have I don't want to say a chance, because there are people that were born in situations like this that didn't go on to do horrible things, including all of his siblings. But he was definitely not born into an ideal situation to set him up for success.
Oh, yeah, for sure.
The family moved between Kansas and the Ozarks before settling just outside of Skidmore. At the age of 15, Ken dropped out of eighth grade, having little interest in an education. Author Harry McLean told Inside Edition that Ken
was bullying people in school. He was about a foot taller than everyone else because he got held back so much. I'm not sure if he could read.
No longer in school, Ken began his life as a career criminal. Soon he established a reputation as a cattle rustler, thief, and womanizer.
Yeah, I think McLean also called him functionally illiterate and said he didn't have a social security number, couldn't really read or write, wasn't like out filing tax returns and like doing, he just was like, I want mine, I'm going to get mine the way I want to get it, and started sort of like growing out his sideburns, slicking his hair down, like wanting to present. They basically said anytime he came into town, he had on like a pearl snap shirt, tucked into jeans, like if people outside of folks on the farm were going to see him, he was putting forth this like, I'm not a poor farmer. I'm mm-hmm. not like you. I'm actually better than you.
Yeah. He was very much into appearances. He also was huge and looked really terrifying. And, you know.
Mm-hmm. He was just big naturally. But yeah, that's a good point with McLean of like him getting held back. All of a sudden, you have a 15-year-old who's mm-hmm. really should be a sophomore, is an eighth grader around like 12 and 13-year-olds. Of course, yeah, anything he says goes. Every single kid would just shrink and run away from him. And in the school picture, he's like, whoop. I mean, he's like, it looks like a
foot taller than everybody.
Yes. Yeah, right. Yeah. He looks like an undercover police officer.
Yeah. So he's getting bullied because kids are, you know, he's bigger than all of them and scary. But he's also bullying because, so it's just this toxic cycle where no one was happy.
Mm-hmm. Sinister Hood will be right back. Sinister Hood is brought to you by Progressive Insurance.
Fiscally responsible financial geniuses, monetary magicians. These are things people say about drivers who switch their car insurance to Progressive and save hundreds.
Because Progressive offers discounts for paying in full, owning a home, and more. Plus, you can count on their great customer service to help you when you need it, so your dollar goes a long way.
Visit Progressive.com to see if you could save on car insurance.
Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Potential savings will vary. Not available in all states or situations.
Hello, it is Ryan, and we could all use an extra bright spot in our day, couldn't we? Just to make up for things like sitting in traffic, doing the dishes, counting your steps, you know, all the mundane stuff. That is why I'm such a big fan of Chumba Casino. Chumba Casino has all your favorite social casino-style games that you can play for free anytime, anywhere with daily bonuses. So sign up now at chumbacasino.com. That's chumbacasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 21 plus. Terms and conditions apply.
By 1952, McElroy had married the first of many wives to come. Her name was Olita, and she was 16 years old. McElroy was 18. The couple moved to Denver, where Olita became pregnant. Sadly, the baby was stillborn. While working at a construction site in Denver, McElroy suffered an on-the-job injury. A large object fell onto McElroy, jamming muscles in his neck and crushing his hard hat. It required a steel plate in his head. Later, family members and townsfolk wondered to author Harry McLean whether that head injury exacerbated McElroy's violent tendencies. Well, we've seen that with Aaron Hernandez and others who have been victims of CTE, that head injuries at a young age can really do a ton of damage that you might not even realize at the time. And then over the years, it just really increases.
That's a good point. Especially being 18, your brain hasn't formed all the way anyway. Mm-hmm. And it's just in your brain like jelly, or in your skull like jelly. And TBIs don't always, but can lead to extreme changes in behavior and attitude and shifting. And like you've never been like this before. He was already kind of shitty. But it was sort of said, well, after this, he was like more aggressive. And again, it's like, I try to get a job as a construction worker and a fucking thing fell on my head. This is why I need to be stealing cattle. Like, this is way worse. I get paid less and I got hit in my head. I'm going back to stealing cattle. Fuck this. So that was his plan.
It's, I mean, there's two ways to look at that. Another person would have been like, well, things happen, but I'm going to put my nose to the grindstone and get back to work and be a great construction worker. And he said, I didn't want to be doing this anyway, so this is a good out.
I got a truck and I'm going to fill it with somebody else's hogs in the middle of the night. And that's what he did.
After moving back to Skidmore, McElroy took up with a 13-year-old named Donna. He continued stealing hogs and cows, with rumors that he impregnated yet another teen with twins in a neighboring town. When Donna's family expressed dismay at his relationship with their daughter, McElroy broke into her family's house and threatened to burn it down. He didn't, and continued dating Donna, though eventually left her for a new girl.
It's like so wild to me that he's like, I want to date Donna. And the family's like, don't. So he took another teenage girl that he wasn't sleeping with, that was just friends with, and broke into Donna's house. And we're like, I think he had her and maybe a friend make him a sandwich. And he was walking around stating loudly, like, I'm going to burn this fucking place down because they told me I couldn't be with Donna. Watch this. And then I think an uncle was in the house, and McElroy was like, oh, that guy's nice. All right, I won't burn the house down. But it's that eeriness that, like, he walked into your house and is just, like, making a sandwich. Like, that is the type of person this was. It wasn't like, excuse me, sir, the door was locked, which everyone in Skidmore was like, we never had to lock the door before this guy. Everybody was just, like, cool with each other. We had fences, but we didn't really worry about it because no one was going to
cut it. Small
town,
safety, familiarity.
Mm-hmm. But then you have one person that goes, oh, this is like a candy store. I could just steal anything I want. And it really was, because it's... You know, what are you going to do? Say, look, this guy broke in my house and made a sandwich. But it's extremely menacing that he did that.
Oh, and to be threatening. And when we say he left her for a new girl, of these are girls. Like, he keeps getting older. They stay the same age. So he liked him young, 13, 14. It was all, I mean, back then, I don't know if it was actually illegal. But, of course, it is illegal and as of now.
Yeah, certainly.
And just, I think, morally gross.
Yeah, morally repugnant, certainly, especially when they are, you know, he's ostensibly plucking them from the schoolyard. Yeah. And that's what, it's interesting that they're like, well, you know, he dated a lot of girls. I'm like, no, he was a serial sex predator. He would groom children. What the word you're looking for is, he groomed children to be his sex partners. Like, he was an adult. Why are we saying they dated?
I'm saying. Why would an adult be hanging out with teenagers and then breaking into houses? Like, that's not something an adult should ever do, period. But especially with kids.
Yeah.
So people were definitely dumbing it down and trying to kind of make it seem like it wasn't as big of a deal as it actually was.
Well, and you sort of write it off. And I would say, too, it was morally repugnant to people in the town because Donna's family's like, no, you can't date her. Mm-hmm. And then he burns their, you know, threatens to burn their house down. It's like every time somebody even tried to intervene, and I was like, oh, so he's a kidnapper. So he's a serial sex predator who uses force to kidnap his victims. Why are we saying he likes to date children? Because that's not a thing that you can do. It's wild.
It's the 50s.
Yeah. Yeah. And that's we look at it through this lens and you go, surely this is illegal in all states. Well, buckle up.
A 15-year-old named Sharon was his next target. The pair, quote, dated, though the 24-year-old McElroy was just as abusive to her as he had been to his previous wives. He remained married to Alita while seeing Sharon on the side. In a heated exchange in the cab of his pickup, McElroy threatened the girl with a shotgun to the face. The gun went off by accident, McElroy claimed, injuring the girl. Rather than have her press charges, McElroy married her, obtaining a divorce from Alita first. Alita, happy to be free of McElroy, agreed and left after the divorce was final.
And you can't blame, every time he finds a new girl, the previous wife somehow gets pushed out or finds, like, oh my God, now is my time. And they run like rabbits and you cannot blame them. It's like, baby, the fence is open. Go, girl, go. So yeah, when he shoots Sharon in the face and then says, well, was this an accident? It was a misunderstanding. He loved to hold people at shotgun point, which I'm like, don't point a gun at something unless you're willing to kill it, is my opinion. So what were you doing? Pointing a gun at your 15-year-old girlfriend's face when you are 24, you disgusting sex predator.
Yeah. Yeah. There's so much wrong with it. And then instead of the family pressing charges, he's like, I'm just going to marry her because then she can't press charges because she'll be my wife.
Yes. And when the family's like, well, we don't really want you to marry her. They're like, oh, he's like, I'll kill your whole family and burn the house down. I will do it today. And they're like, you know what? We feel like you guys are going to be really happy together. And like, it's every time.
If anybody pissed him off, it was hold him at gunpoint with a shotgun, threaten to burn their house down, or maybe you follow through on both of those things.
Yes. And I'm like, you are abducting children. This person is a serial sex predator. But again, at the time, it was kind of like, well, we can't really do anything because he said he's going to burn my house down and kill me. And like, he sits outside my house and just stares. Like, we would have to do
stalking.
Like 30.
He's stalking all of them.
Yes. I was going to say, we would have to do like 50 episodes, but just to give you an idea, everything he did to each of these girls, he pretty much did to all of them, which is then if their parents said no, just like stalk their families and sit outside the house and stare at them until they acquiesce.
And then eventually he'd find somebody else or the girl would become older than he was interested in. And mm-hmm. that was her way out of it as well. There was yep. really like, you either aged out for him or he got bored with you and moved on. And those were the only ways these girls could get out of these relationships, mm-hmm. abusive
scenarios,
hostage. Yeah.
Yeah. Captive situation. Certainly. Mm-hmm.
Sharon gave birth to a boy, Jerome, in 1958. McElroy sent the child to live with his sister in California after Sharon left him unattended in the driveway once. Sharon then gave birth to a daughter, Tammy Sue, in 1961. Sharon tried several times to get away from McElroy, even spending time in a foster family's care with her infant child. Each time, McElroy would find her and drag her back.
And the story of the foster family that took her in and took care of her and the baby and were like really excited to see her like going to school and having girlfriends and like being a normal teenager. And that's mm-hmm. why child marriage is extremely harmful. It's like she was stolen from all of this stuff. Her life was stolen from her. So the foster mom was like, I'll take care of your baby. Go to school, have friends, learn things. And McElroy found them, found a way to get to them. And literally each time would say like, run away with me, come find me. And he had this charisma kind of thing about him. But also you can't blame a child for being yeah. groomed and lured by their groomer.
And they are very aware of what he's capable of because mm-hmm. they've been abused by him for years. So
yeah.
she knows if I say no, he's probably going to kill me, could kill our kids, could kill mm-hmm. this family that's been taking such good care of me. So, I mean, charisma, but also just fear.
Coercion, yeah. A man like Kim McElroy, you can never say, oh, well, we were in a true, free, and fair relationship together
no.
because every interaction in his life was predicated on fear and coercive control and physical violent control as well. And so it's just anytime anybody's like, well, these women could have just left him. I'm like, fuck you. No, they couldn't.
One, they weren't women. They are teenage girls.
Yes.
Like young, like tweens.
Yes. Like,
so
the kind of girls that, like,
Justin
Bieber. They
shouldn't even be in this position yes. in the first place.
Right? I'm like, you're the kind that nowadays you're doing TikTok dances and you're, like,
right.
hanging out with your friends going to the mall in the 80s. These women were like, oh, this your giant old man of a husband's going to come home and do unspeakably horrible things to you in every
yeah.
possible way.
I don't think any of his relationships were consensual.
No.
Throughout the late 1950s and 1960s, McElroy was frequently seen spending time with teen girls from around town, usually aged 13 to 15. McElroy would befriend the girls, offering them candy and giving them rides. One girl, referred to in the book In Broad Daylight by the pseudonym Sally, was just 13 when McElroy, 26, took an interest in her in 1960. After weeks of rides and candy, one night, Sally was dumped on a neighbor's lawn, her clothes ripped and bloody, having been assaulted by McElroy. He threatened to kill her father if Sally refused to move in with him and his wife, Sharon. Sally agreed and moved in.
So now you have two coerced, stolen children that are
yeah.
forced to live with him and bear his children by gunpoint, by violent gunpoint.
Yeah. And also deal with each other, you know?
Mm-hmm.
I mean,
they didn't,
like,
yeah.
who knows what that relationship's like? Tension. There's, it's hard for me to imagine there was ever a truly happy moment for these girls being with him.
No, and you only hear it, I feel like, in very delusional retrospect. Like, we'll talk mm-hmm. probably more in like parts 2 and 3, but like some of these folks, when they get like distance, are like, he was really nice.
Well, he was a good guy sometimes.
He was a nice dad
yeah.
sometimes. And I'm like, okay, well, you know, again, with the Chicago fire, the water was safe. Like, not everything was destroyed,
right.
but it's like, you know, like maybe the baby didn't hear everything because it was a baby, but like, it's hard to hear significantly people who have been significantly abused over such a long stretch and have clearly not had the resources, time, ability, what support to process it. Mm-hmm. And like, you tell yourselves the stories you have to survive.
From 1959 to 1965, Ken fathered 8 children with Sharon and Sally. There was a point where they were both in the hospital in labor at the same time with McElroy's children. Sharon gave birth to Jerome in 1959, Tammy Sue in 1961, Teresa Lynn in 1963, Tina Renee in 64, and Debbie Ann in 65. By the birth of her fifth child, Sharon was just 22 years old. Sally gave birth to Ken Jr. in 1961, Lisa in 63, and Jeffrey in 64, making her 16 years old with three children.
What do we say? Their lives are stolen.
Yeah. I mean, children having children and not because they want to be. And also zero support as far as a spouse or a father goes. Like, it's all on them to do everything. And then you accidentally leave your baby unattended for a second and he finds out and ships your kid off to live somewhere across the country from you.
Yeah, exactly. It's like, well, I'm going to just come in and make declarations. And you're like, you were out stealing cows and having sex with every woman in the county. Mm-hmm. And you're going to come and tell me how to raise these children that you forced me to have?
Mm-hmm. When I'm a child myself, like, I can barely take care of myself. How am I supposed to take care of three other kids?
The only solace is they had each other. You know, it's like, to be in a situation like
Sharon and Sally.
Like,
I hope that they, like, were able to form a connection and it wasn't like jealousy, because they've got to realize they're just both in survival mode.
And I think it's everybody's in survival mode, right?
Mm-hmm. Throughout the late 1960s, McElroy made a living stealing cattle. He would seduce the wives of ranchers, learning where each farm's weak points were located. Then, late at night, McElroy and a buddy would come back with a truck to load up the goods. At home, McElroy engaged in a reign of terror over the young women. He would abuse them both in many ways, leaving them desperate for escape. Once, when Sharon tried to leave, she was locked in the house for 2 days. When she reported McElroy to the authorities, he sweet-talked her into dropping charges, then continued the abuse once they were home from the police station.
Which the officers now were just like, please don't do this. Like, you can't talk somebody out of it. But she's like, no, he said he's different and it'll change. And it's just so, so hard.
Yeah.
As law enforcement. Yeah.
When you're that young and you've been groomed for so long and been abused by him and brainwashed for so long, you know, and that's, again, the laws were different. But hopefully now the police would be like, well, it's actually, you're a minor, so we're going to have, we know that these things happen, so we're taking up the charges regardless if you want to drop them or not.
Right. It's almost like if she hadn't been forcibly married to this person and if she was not his wife over whom he had complete control, this wouldn't be happening. But it's because you could marry a child, then you could do whatever you want with her, and it was heinous things.
Mm-hmm. Sally eventually left when she became too old for McElroy and he lost interest. Out on her own, Sally struggled, especially with alcohol, eventually leading to her kids being removed from her care. A teen babysitter left the children unattended while Sally was out one evening. Neighbors called the authorities, and the children were taken into foster care. Sally later moved away from Skidmore and wasn't heard from any further. All of her kids were adopted by other families. Author Harry McLean later caught up with one of the children as an adult. The boy had grown into a kind man, working as a special ed teacher in California.
But she said an interesting thing when he met that guy and was like, he's quiet, he's soft-spoken, he's sweet, he's empathetic, and it is a huge question of nature versus nurture.
Yeah.
And he was like, here's one for in the nurture column. Like, that was your dad. You had no idea until you were like 25 that was your dad, because you found some articles in your parents' office and you're like, where am I from? And then you figure out there's a whole fucking movie with Brian Dennehy in it about your dad. And you're like, what?
Yeah.
But that's nature.
And then imagine if perhaps McElroy had had that type of upbringing, like how that could have shaped things. And there is a lot to be said for the nurture side of things. Nature and nurture. It all goes together.
Not just different from McElroy, but like every name we've listed today. Like, he's touched and or ruined every life that we mentioned today. And this is just the people that he had direct contact with.
Right.
Sinister Hood will be right back. Sinister Hood is brought to you by Progressive Insurance.
Fiscally responsible financial geniuses, monetary magicians. These are things people say about drivers who switch their car insurance to Progressive and save hundreds.
Because Progressive offers discounts for paying in full, owning a home, and more. Plus, you can count on their great customer service to help you when you need it. So your dollar goes a long way.
Visit progressive.com to see if you could save on car insurance.
Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Potential savings will vary. Not available in all states or situations.
Hello, it is Ryan, and we could all use an extra bright spot in our day, couldn't we? Just to make up for things like sitting in traffic, doing the dishes, counting your steps, you know, all the mundane stuff. That is why I'm such a big fan of Chumba Casino. Chumba Casino has all your favorite social casino-style games that you can play for free anytime, anywhere with daily bonuses. So sign up now at chumbacasino.com. That's chumbacasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 21 plus. Terms and conditions apply.
With Sally gone, McElroy turned his sights on Alice Wood, a 15-year-old living on her own and working as a drugstore clerk. In 1961, when he was 26, McElroy left Sharon and their four children back in Skidmore and moved to the nearby town of St. Joe with Alice. Rather than a home, Alice's apartment became a home base from which McElroy would travel to sleep with other women and steal more cattle and hogs. With McElroy out of town in St. Joe, Sharon left Skidmore in 1968, bound for her mom's house in Florida, taking four of McElroy's children with her. That same year, Alice gave birth to McElroy's ninth child, a boy named Juarez, who became McElroy's favorite. When he was home, McElroy continued his pattern of severe abuse, targeting young Alice. In 1969, Sheriff Reed Miller was elected in a county near Skidmore. One of the major issues Miller had to contend with was the rampant cattle and hog theft. The suspect was Ken McElroy. Different farmers would line up outside Miller's office each morning, upset that their expensive livestock had gone missing. The sheriff estimated that in just 3 months, area farmers had lost over $100,000 of hogs and cattle. They began staying up all night holding rifles, waiting to catch the criminal. Somehow, he always got away.
And that's what Sheriff Miller was basically like. It was a cat and mouse kind of a game to where he would try to patrol one side of the county. But somehow, while he was patrolling one side of the county, the hog rustler would always strike the other side. So Ken was not working alone. He had a series of people that he paid that were either his coon hunting buddies or his like people that he was in. He liked to raise coon hound dogs, like hunting dogs. So he knew a ton of people from that or just other petty criminals that he met when he would drive to these seedy bars in other states. So if you start to feel like you're fighting a ghost, you're like, am I crazy? I was out all night. But somehow he would figure out, well, he was figuring out where to go and when to go because he was fucking the ranchers' wives. So he also knew like secret ways to sneak in because he had literally inside information because he was getting inside.
He also had, his little minions around town, like, well, the cops are over on the east side right now. So you got to hit the west side. And It's a expensive game. The cattle and hog and $100,000 back then.
Oh yeah, in 1969. Oh yeah, and it was
you're a millionaire.
Certainly, I mean, he was always had new trucks, new clothes, slick back hair, and again, didn't have a job. Like this was his only job, and all of these farmers. Everybody looked like they're waiting in line for the new iPhone. That's an old reference, but like he's like literally there would just be like 30 people waiting outside the sheriff's office with their arms crossed, like, "Well, I got hit. Well, me too. Well, me too. Well, I did too." And he's like, "Well," but I believe Sheriff Reed Miller had once tried to help Sharon McElroy escape, if I'm not mistaken, or one of the wives. He had been with them, listened to them, whatever. And I think, in my opinion, Ken was like, I'm going to hit that county because fuck that guy. Because he was a weird, obsessive, petty. If he had some thought that you might have slighted him in the least, he would do something like this. Like he would choose to steal cattle to drive this one sheriff crazy because one time that sheriff was like nice to his wife.
Yeah. No, it's very territorial and obsessive. Like the obsession of writing whatever wrong he believes has occurred or whatever slight. There's an incident in episode 2 we'll talk about that involves a gumball and the escalation from 0 to 100, 100 being, I'm going to burn your whole house down.
I'm going to ruin your life.
It's just insanity that, and it shows, you know, his anger issues and everything that he, and it goes back to the kid thing of like people looking down on him. He didn't want anybody thinking they were better than him. So if he felt slighted and like well, that person must think they're better than me that they can do that to me. I'm going to go fuck their wife and burn their house down.
Yeah, and I think it was that too. It was like, I'm going to go steal from these rich ranchers. They think they're all better than me, dumbasses. I have their cows and I had sex with their wife in your face. That it was like this kind of compulsion to prove mm-hmm. that he was better. Like, I may not be able to read, but I have like 16 of your cows that I sold at a, you know, black market livestock auction.
Mm-hmm. As the 1970s approached, McElroy graduated from cattle theft to stealing expensive herbicide. He would steal truckloads of the chemicals, worth thousands of dollars, and sell them to farmers in neighboring counties. He also employed a gang of teen boys from the area who would pilfer everything from tools and antiques to horses and trailers. McElroy bought the stolen goods from the boys for pennies on the dollar, then resold them later at auction for a huge profit.
Good old-fashioned fencing. Just taking stolen shit and selling it for more than what you got it for.
Tale as old as time. But again, everybody he does business with, criminally or that he's having an inappropriate intimate relationship with, they're all teenagers. Yeah. No one in his world is of his age.
Mm-mm. It seemed like he had maybe a couple of, but they were younger. Even if they were adults, like he would be in his 30s and they would be in their 20s and teens, or he would be in his 40s and they would be in their early 30s and 20s. And I wonder if it was a perhaps related to him dropping out of school so young, being illiterate, not that I think they were given IQ tests, like you have to do this to interact with anybody in town, but I think he had this kind of like, well, I can be the smartest person in the room. Mm. If everyone in the room is 20 years younger than me, or at least 10, 15 years younger than me, I can seem smart and wise and like I know what's going on, and there's no one around smart enough to call my bullshit.
It's like when I play Teen Jeopardy on the I'm like, I can do this. I can be on Jeopardy. And then it's like, it's teen week. And I'm like, well, I could be on teen week, but I'm not because I'm not a teen, Ken.
Right?
I think also younger people perhaps he thought would be easier to intimidate and kind of have control over.
And manipulate. You're right. Mm-hmm. I mean, I think if that's the idea of I need to get something over on someone, well, a person who has less life experience and is less likely to call you on your shit, perfect target. And that's who we targeted.
At the dawn of the 1970s, McElroy continued his crime spree. He committed two felonies in St. Joe, a handful in Savannah, and a dozen in nearby Maryville. McElroy had also begun a relationship with Marcia Soretti, known as Marty. Some nights, McElroy would take either Alice or Marty on cattle-stealing ventures, explaining to the young women how exactly he broke into each farm. He's proud of it.
Yeah, and I think it was, again, I can show off, like, look what I can do.
Yeah.
Like, this nice car you're in, guess what paid for it?
Yeah, it's, just that whole, like, you like this, like, you impressed by this, sweetie, and you're like, she's 15. Like, she doesn't know anything.
She'd be impressed even by if she is, card trick.
Ick, gross, embarrassing.
Mm-hmm, super ick. And they said he would wait out, like, the schoolyard, essentially, to pick up girls, which, I will reiterate, that's a serial sex offender. Who should have been locked up.
Yeah. Any of this stuff today, it would not have gotten to where it got because it would have been shut down long before that, just for laws alone.
But you have like the 1960s and 70s in a one sheriff county, not even town. So that sheriff's got a lot on their plate. Just even if it is a small town with nothing happening, you have several small towns and there's a lot happening because this motherfucker is stealing literally anything that's not tied down.
Also, maybe I don't think it would be beneath him to bribe anybody.
Yeah, or also just straight up threaten them.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. The sheriff has a wife and kids.
Yeah, I think he liked to bribe more, or he liked to threaten more than bribe.
Yeah, he would, it was like, oh, I'll just kill you too. And it was like, oh, I'm just kidding, Ken, it's fine. Just keep doing what you're doing. No worries, man. And even sometimes that didn't work. He would still just shoot you or beat your ass just for crossing his path.
In 1971, Marty gave birth to another McElroy son, Tony. Meanwhile, McElroy's abusive pattern continued, with Alice and Marty as his current victims. One day in October of 1971, the two women were driving together along a country road with a car full of tools and furniture police believed were stolen from nearby farmhouses. Police stopped and questioned the women until they agreed to drive through the area with sheriff's deputies and give statements detailing what farms they had seen McElroy hit.
Which, you know, for the cops are like, fuck yes, we finally have an answer. Somebody will talk.
Yeah. For those girls, though, knowing what's going to happen when he finds out is all I would be thinking about.
Right. Or unless you think this is my only chance of escape. Like, maybe if I tell him, he'll get arrested. And like, he's stolen so much. Surely he'll go to jail for this. It's crazy. I'll hand you exactly all the places he was stolen. And I can tell you, the girls could literally remember. Oh, yeah. I think on September 5th, we hit that house on this road. And the cops would go back and look and be like, yeah, we had a report on that day, September 5th, that road. And she's like, I think we took 3 hogs and 2 cows. It was like stolen, 3 hogs and 2 cows. Like, it was a it was definitely him.
Yeah, so yeah, yeah.
You got him dead to rights.
In October of 1971, McElroy was charged with 5 counts of burglary and theft for earlier incidents. For unknown reasons, the arrest warrants were never executed, and the case was never prosecuted. He was then charged with 4 additional counts in February of 1972 for breaking and entering and hog theft due to Alice and Marty's statements to police. A year later, once the women's depositions were taken in preparation for trial, they both claimed the police had coerced them into turning on McElroy and that they had lied. They refused to testify to the crimes. The DA was forced to drop the charges, just like in every prior case involving McElroy.
And some of them, like the October 1971 charges, it doesn't even say why they were dropped, but who got threatened? The prosecutor, yeah, witnesses, exactly. Whatever. It's like that he's why his own charges get dropped, because at this point he doesn't even have really a very good lawyer, and he would just figure out a way to bully, again, I guess that's the word everyone was using, but threaten, coerce.
Yeah.
Any witnesses.
And he has a year to threaten these girls, threaten their families, their shared children. And I mean, understandably, yeah, the charges got dropped because they're fearing for their lives.
Yeah. And Alice was, both of them were receiving significant, severe abuse. And it was, it's not surprising that they would turn and say, no, we don't want to testify. We're so, exactly. We were jealous. We were mad. That's why we did it. You can't blame either of the kids, these young women at all, for what they did.
No. By this time, McElroy and Alice were living with their young son, Juarez, in McElroy's parents' house outside Skidmore, while Marty had her own place. Eventually, in April of 1972, Alice fled. While McElroy was out of the house, she grabbed Juarez, then 3 years old, and fled to her mom and stepdad's house in nearby St. Joe. McElroy called Alice, threatening to come get her and Juarez. She refused to come back to him, instead deciding to herself that if McElroy came for them, she would shoot him. Preparing for the worst, Alice took a .32 caliber gun out of her closet and began to load it. The weapon discharged accidentally, striking Alice in the hip. While she was in the hospital, McElroy called the house, saying he was headed up to St. Joe to take his son.
Because he doesn't give a fuck about her, even though she got shot in the hip.
Yeah, trying to set herself up so she could defend herself and her son.
Right? That's like the injury, not only the injury that's the painfulness, but the, like, I was so close to being away.
Yeah. Alice's stepfather, Otha, warned McElroy to stay away, which only enraged him more. McElroy showed up in St. Joe with a .22 caliber rifle, so Otha guarded the house near the front window with a rifle of his own. McElroy yelled for the man to come out, then hid in his truck. When he saw Otha standing in the front window, he fired through the glass, hitting Otha in his thigh. Alice's stepfather survived his injuries and decided to press charges.
Just luring a man to where you can shoot him in his house.
He's a psychopath. Like, honestly,
he's hunting people.
He really is. Monster is an overused word. I got to find a new word. I mean, he's just, from such a young age on out, it's like a horror movie where guy just keeps getting worse and worse, and there's nothing redeeming about him at all.
It does. It seems like a horror movie, but I feel like if you wrote the script, somebody'd be like, it's a little much. Like,
you're like, that's like heavy. True. And they're like, what? You're like, yeah.
You're like, wait till the end. Sinisterhood will be right back. Sinisterhood is brought to you by Progressive Insurance.
Fiscally responsible financial geniuses, monetary magicians. These are things people say about drivers who switch their car insurance to Progressive and save hundreds.
Because Progressive offers discounts for paying in full, owning a home, and more. Plus, you can count on their great customer service to help you when you need it. So your dollar goes a long way.
Visit progressive.com to see if you could save on car insurance.
Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Potential savings will vary. Not available in all states or situations.
Hello, it is Ryan, and I was on a flight the other day playing one of my favorite social spin slot games on ChumbaCasino.com. I looked over at the person sitting next to me, and you know what they were doing? They were also playing Chumba Casino. Everybody's loving having fun with it. Chumba Casino is home to hundreds of casino-style games that you can play for free anytime, anywhere. So sign up now at ChumbaCasino.com to claim your free welcome bonus. That's ChumbaCasino.com and live the Chumba life.
Sponsored by Chumba Casino. No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 21 plus. Terms and conditions apply.
That summer, McElroy was charged with assault with intent to do great bodily harm for shooting Otha. The charges only enraged McElroy further. He began calling Otha's house at least once a day, threatening to shoot him, his wife, or their son. McElroy also stalked the family's house, making his presence known with frequent drive-bys or by following the family's car. He tormented Otha by yelling on his lawn for him to come out and face him like a man. One day, when the beleaguered victim finally agreed, there was no McElroy waiting for him. After yelling for Otha to come outside, McElroy hid in his truck, refusing to confront Otha. Later, Otha received a call from McElroy taunting him for going outside.
And it's like he would go every day and be like, come out and fight me like a man. And Otha wouldn't come out. He wouldn't come out. And like months later, he's like, all right, I'm going to fight you. And then he called him and was like, I saw you went outside, bitch. And yeah. It's like, now you're just messing with me. But it's like, you're messing. It was like psychological torture. Like,
yeah, no, that's what he is like a, psychological torture is a good way to put it. Like it's not just criminal stuff. He's like a master manipulator getting in these girls' heads and like scrambling their brains up. Like it's evil, evil stuff.
Yeah, and I feel like he got pleasure out of that too. In addition to physical harm, making people scared and sitting out in front of the house, and he would just shoot the rifle off. So you're just sitting in your house having, you know, your okra or whatever, having dinner, and you just hear pow, pow, out yeah. front, and then you look and you see he's just sitting in his truck like, hi, and he just waves at you. Like, what are you going to do? Call the sheriff. By the time they get there, he's going to be gone. Or the sheriff's like, who's outside your house? I'm so sorry. I'm busy. I'm very busy in another yeah. state and I cannot come. And you're like, please help me. And they're like, oh, new phone, who this? And then they just hang up on you and it's horrible.
And you see, like, the more this goes on, it doesn't seem crazy that when time and time again, the townsfolk have tried to reach out to the sheriff and authorities to help them and no one helps them and they're just being terrorized. Eventually, you're just going to take matters into your own hands.
Right. And to clarify, all of this is happening after he was charged with assault with intent to do great bodily harm. So he is out on bond terrorizing this victim further. And I mean, shout out to Otha for being like, nah, man, like, let's proceed. Like, this sucks, but let's proceed. But that puts your wife, your kid, everybody at risk. It's so scary.
But he was very brave to mm-hmm. be like, you're not going to intimidate me, because he saw how his stepdaughter had been intimidated and abused by him, now his grandson, all the other people. So this grown man finally is like, okay, I'll come out here and fight you. And he fucking runs. The mm-hmm. one time someone's like, I'll stand up to you, let's go.
He's like, gone.
I'm not even going to be there.
Mm-mm. You came outside, idiot. And it's like, you're the mm-hmm. idiot that you ran because you know how to beat your ass. Yeah, I don't blame Otha for standing his ground for sure.
Mm-mm. The intervening months were hell, with McElroy continuing his daily harassment. Otha told Harry McLean, author of In Broad Daylight.
He shifted the fault onto the victim, and then the victim became responsible for his pain.
The assault case drug on, with dates put on the calendar, only to be continued. Finally, nearly a year after the incident, on January 10th, 1973, Otha was forced to face down his abuser. Not in court, but at a bar in St. Joe called Garland's Tavern. Wielding a corn knife, McElroy approached his son's step-grandfather and threatened to cut Otha's guts if he testified in the assault case. An entire tavern of witnesses looked on, as Otha simply separated himself from McElroy with a chair and refused to be intimidated. flex.
A corn knife. Yikes.
What does a corn knife look like?
I feel like it's a, let me see if I can pull it up.
Big old knife?
From what I recall, it's got a bit of a curve to it.
But this was more of his MO. He liked to go to bars and just get drunk and just threaten people. And it's like, why don't you just fucking make a friend, dude? Like, be cool to somebody. Go talk to someone about the shit you've gone through. And but no, it wasn't. That wasn't on his agenda. And it, as we've seen, when you don't deal with problems, they just continue to, it's snowball effect.
And that's what it is. It's, he never wanted to take responsibility for anything he did. Like, if you're really like, I'm going to be a man, then fucking go face the charges for the guy you shot in the thigh, dumbass. Then be a man. If we're going to use that like dated terminology. But no, he was a huge pussy his whole entire life. As much of a bully as he was, the secret behind all bullies is that they're huge pussies and they use violence to hide that. And it was like, he didn't, he never wanted to step up and do the right thing and take responsibility. So his whole legacy to me, in addition to being like, light, if we're going light, as a bully, but at the end of it, it was a humongous coward, like as fearless, quote unquote, as everyone wants to say he was. No, a fearless person would face what they had done, but instead he was like cat covering up shit on the tile floor, just constantly going around like, who else can I shoot, who else can I intimidate, to try to cover up rather than taking responsibility. And a corn knife, it goes in your hand and then it comes up about the length of a forearm and hooks over like a sickle. So it's like a sickle in your hand. That's what I was envisioning. I think it's, you can,
yikes,
you can slice corn. But yeah, it looks like a little mini to-go sickle. Like if you're a, never mind. I was going to say a Grim Reaper on the go, you know, if you just need like a little to-go sickle.
You got to get a to-go sickle. I think the, to your point of he wouldn't accept accountability, Otha's quote of he shifted the fault onto the victim and then the victim became responsible for his pain was a very progressive quote for the time.
Yeah,
very poignant too.
And it was thoughtful because he was saying like, you know, anytime if Alice left him, it was her fault. Like she's a monster and she's hurting him. Or if she told someone about him hurting her, she was embarrassing him. So it was like any, it's a Darvo. Like it's any, the playbook has not ever been updated. Like abusers have been abusing the same way for time immemorial, for centuries old. And for every person that's ever abused, you or me or anyone listening, they weren't mad geniuses who like were so smart. They're all the same hurt, broken people that are using the same playbook. And it was only us, thankfully, through time, we've all been able to see it that way. But you're right. Otha seeing it for what it was way back when, or at least when Harry McLean wrote that book, going like, he would just turn everything around on us. And we realized like, this is his mindset. He's going to blame us for this forever and never take responsibility.
Oh, yeah. He was the greatest gaslighter to ever have lived.
But super bold to just put a chair in between you and be like, nah.
No, we're not doing this. You can put that knife away. McElroy left and returned in 10 minutes, brandishing an automatic 12-gauge shotgun. He then locked the doors to the tavern and told the patrons not to move or leave. McElroy held Otha at gunpoint, with the barrel of the shotgun level with Otha's nose. He warned Otha to swear not to testify or else face McElroy's shotgun. Rather than shoot the terrified man, McElroy shot the ground. He threatened once more to kill Otha if he testified, then left.
Just in that paragraph, he committed like 16 felonies. Like you can't lock everyone in. Like you've just imprisoned everyone in there. You can't threaten them all with a weapon, not to move. You're holding,
you got a hostage situation, yes, is what you're telling me.
You've taken hostages to shoot at your I guess, wife, former wife's stepdad, like, who is also the victim of your crime in an ongoing criminal matter. That's how much this guy does not give a fuck about the law.
No, no, he sure doesn't. And again, though, we see, I mean, luckily he didn't shoot Otha, but he's like, well, you don't want a knife? I'll go get a gun. And then I'm going to taunt you with this gun and threaten you. But then I'm just going to shoot the ground and leave. It's like, okay, then what was the point of all of this? Like, you're just trying to intimidate me. I already put a chair between us. Clearly, it's not going
to
work.
I'm not trying to be intimidated. Down.
So, but it shows again, like, he's just a coward at the end of the day.
Otha's got nuts of steel in them jean dungarees to be like staring down the barrel of a literal psychopath shotgun and being like, I mean, do what you got to do. I'm doing what I'm doing. And then you do see that McElroy's like, I'm crazy, but I'm not blow someone's head off in front of an entire bar crazy. But we'll
that
see.
That was his line.
He'll that was his line here. He'll start pulling the trigger in part two. Mm-hmm. Just stay tuned.
Otha told authorities what had happened. McElroy was charged with witness intimidation. McElroy claimed he was only attempting to sell the gun to a man at the bar, and it went off accidentally. When authorities tried prosecuting the case, they found that every single witness, including all the patrons and the bartender, simply could not remember seeing anything. They all told the DA they had heard a shot, but weren't sure what happened.
I wonder how they all lost their memory.
That's very interesting, isn't it? And how bizarre that twice now, what bad luck that he is holding a shotgun and it just accidentally goes off right next to the person he's threatening.
It's almost like you shouldn't have access to weapons, sir, because you're loose with them and you just, they whoopsie go off in people's general vicinity.
Did you even have to have a license back then?
Probably not back then.
You just have a gun.
Loose. Yeah.
Do whatever you want.
They may have been burgeoning laws of like, well, you must pass this, whatever. But yeah, that would be an interesting thing to go back and look at. But also in this town, it didn't fucking matter. He was stealing cows and taking children off the streets. I don't think he'd be like, but I don't have a license. I can't carry this.
No, I was just wondering, because he does have so many, and a lot of the people in this story do.
But he had an arsenal.
Yeah. And how do you get all those? Well, you run with criminals doing bad things, and that's how you meet people that sell you stuff like that.
And steal them from every house you walk into, probably.
True, yeah. McElroy hired Kansas City criminal defense attorney Richard Gene McFadden to represent him in the case. When McElroy approached the attorney at the courthouse asking for representation, McFadden wasn't sure McElroy could afford his services. When the thick man with the even thicker mutton chops produced $3,000 cash on the spot for the retainer fee, McFadden told him,
"You just hired yourself a lawyer."
Yeah, it's kind of jokey. And in the docuseries, no one saw a thing.
I'm like, oh, it's not a flex. It's not a flex that you represented him. It's not a flex.
I've seen so many docuseries with older Southern white men lawyers who, even decades after a case they were part of, when they're like interviewed for it, the nostalgia and like pride they felt at the time maybe just surfaces so quickly. It's like, right, you know, it just bubbles up, and it's like they're kind of transported back to that time and almost forget the seriousness of what their client did. And it's like, it was kind of funny. I'll tell you, I thought he couldn't afford me. And then I told him, well, you just hired yourself a lawyer.
Yeah, they're like, Matt McElroy's a hell of a guy. I'm like, it's one thing to represent Hannibal Lecter. It's quite another to be like, you know what, though, when we play chess, he is just a little teddy bear. And you're like, you have to, the context, people. We're back to the word context. Mm-hmm. Like, it's one thing to be like, well, he was a mean son of a bitch and terrible person, and he beat every single wife he came across. But my job was to make sure his rights were upheld, and that's what I did. But instead, he's like, oh, man, he came up to me. He was crazy. And I'm like, fuck you. Again, everyone deserves a representation, but you don't have to take such glee in the fact that you essentially caused this shitstorm that we're about to see over the next three episodes by your helping a person who was already really good at dodging the criminal justice system on their own with very little legal help. And now you've added Ken McElroy, who is a slippery bastard, and now a slippery ass attorney who's willing to be like, yeah, this is how you get even slipperier.
Eventually, the witness intimidation case went before a magistrate in April of 1973. Otha testified, and McElroy was convicted. While the intimidation case was on appeal, it was suddenly dismissed by the prosecutor with no reason given. After 2 years of delays, Otha told the DA to dismiss the assault case if it wasn't ever going to trial, as the abuse and harassment from McElroy had become too much. That case was dropped as well. Once again, McElroy's MO to delay the proceedings and intimidate witnesses worked in getting charges dropped against him. As McElroy liked to brag,
no witness, no case.
Well, everyone apparently has their price with this guy. And by price, I mean whatever they were threatened with. Finally, they were like, all right, fine. We're not doing it. I'm dropping it. Right. We're not doing it. And also, he is so dug in to this obsession to ruin Otha's life and all of his family that for 2 years, and years before that. I mean, for like 5 years, he's tormenting this family. Like the time it takes to do that when he's still doing all these other illegal things.
Mm-hmm. It's he's just a busy
like,
guy.
Yeah, his job was like just harassing people and doing crimes all rural day, terrorist. Every day. Yeah.
Yeah. Put it on your business card. Ken McElroy, rural terrorist. Because it was like, well, I have a really busy day today. I have to drive by Otis' house and stare at him for like an hour and make him nervous. Then this other guy was at the bar when I shot at Otis. So I've got to go to his house and be like, I'll kill your kids if you say anything. And then after I do that, I'm going to go steal 15 hogs from this really nice guy that's been raising them. It's probably going to bankrupt his farm, but I don't care. Then I'm going to come home and beat both of my child wives.
Wife.
Yes, I'm going to fuck his wife and then come home and beat my child wives to the point that I like break their ocular cavities, like crazy stuff, like the book is very graphic. If you're interested in the nitty gritty detail, I cannot recommend Harry McLean's book. He spent 3 years living in Skidmore with these folks. He goes back every few years and visits them. He was an attorney. It's incredibly thorough and it is based on like court records and it is
harrowing.
I was going to say, we're not giving you all the details, but I was like, oh, there's another one. Like just at Original Pancake House reading this book, being like, can I get you some more coffee? I'm like, yeah, I'm going to need some more coffee because it is just gruesome. Everything, like you said, 24 hours a day, except for when he was asleep, although I'm sure he was a nightmare and snored really loud. So then even when you're asleep, you're fucking inconvenienced to
farting
everybody.
Farting uncontrollably.
Fucking farting all over the place, snoring like crazy, probably
stinking up the house.
Whacking people in your sleep and coming home late, waking everybody up, waking babies up, 53 kids in the house. Like he was a nightmare to everyone he encountered, I guess, except Richard Gene McFadden, who thought they were homies and he loved him.
Child marriage in the United States is still going on. Most U.S. states still allow marriage before 18, and the 13 states that banned it have only done so in the recent past. According to a study by the advocacy group Unchained at Last, nearly 300,000 minors were legally married in the U.S. from 2000 to 2018, with most being girls wed to adult men.
I know that last statistic shocked everybody.
What's that?
Just most of the, it's like 95% of the, 99% of the marriages are young girls being wed to adult men. Like that's, I mean, like, of course.
How is it not 100%?
Yeah. I know. I'm like shocked. Like, what are these other tiny percentage of cases? I'm sure they're probably
other minors. Young kids getting married.
Yeah. But it's like the fact that this is not just legal, but is a discussion in certain states. Mm-hmm. Like, should we? No. Yes. Yes, you should ban it. You should. Yeah.
It is.
How is it not?
I was thinking the other day how weird it is of who decided it that, like, at 16, you get to take your driver's test. At 18, you can buy cigarettes and vote. At 21, you get to drink alcohol. It's like these ages are just kind of arbitrary. And then also, personally, I think some of them are too young for people to be doing the stuff that they're now legally allowed to do. That doesn't mean you should be doing it.
Right. For each of those things, I'm sure there's like the cigarette companies were like, we think 18. We think it's great if they're just, you don't really even need to have your lungs all the way. Like kids, right? No kids. Okay. No kids. We get it. 18 though. But I mean, you're
18,
right. Like, why
not
did
a
we
kid
choose
out of high school?
Right. Like, why did we choose 18 for military service or whatever? I'm sure there's, and if anybody knows, please email or DM us. I love information. But you're right. It was like these kind of arbitrary decisions. But I think now we see, and especially with something like child marriage, there have been so many studies, like long-term studies, that the rates, that it's just straight up physically harmful. Like girls who marry before age 19 are 50% more likely to drop out of high school than their peers. They're 4 times less likely to finish college. They experience higher rates of psychiatric disorders, and they face rates of intimate partner violence 3 times the level of the U.S. average. So something like that, where you're like, I think some lawmakers are like, it's kind of arbitrary. Like, why do we pick this age? Advocacy groups like Unchained at Last are like, we can kind of eyeball it and like maybe just if they can't join the military, they shouldn't be able to sign up to like be married away to an older person forever. Yeah. And that's not always how, you know, if it's an 18 and a 17 year old or whatever, but this is more of
still
a
too young. I mean,
15 and a 25,
but it's still too young. Don't do
it. Don't get married.
You have your whole life ahead of you. Just if it's meant to be, then you can wait like 5-10 years. You know what I mean? Like, why
exchange
do you gotta be
ring
tied down so early on?
Right, exactly. I know, God. I was always like, I'm gonna be married so young. I like really wanted to. And my parents got married young and it worked out. But that was also the 70s. And I feel like not everybody is an anecdotal case, especially when it comes to, and they were like, when I say young, 20 and 19, they weren't like child marriage age, but definitely much younger than I was when I got married. And, you know, everybody is an anecdotal case of like, this worked for me or didn't work. But I think with something like this, where you have these long-term studies that show statistically, if the girl's not into it and is literally a family member is signing her away, is not going to be a happy, fruitful, and productive life.
No. And so often it's also based on religion. And then that's a whole other messy case too.
Sinisterhood will be right back. Sinisterhood is brought to you by Progressive Insurance.
Fiscally responsible financial geniuses, monetary magicians. These are things people say about drivers who switch their car insurance to Progressive and save hundreds.
Because Progressive offers discounts for paying in full, owning a home, and more. Plus, you can count on their great customer service to help you when you need it, so your dollar goes a long way.
Visit Progressive.com to see if you could save on car insurance.
Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Potential savings will vary. Not available in all states or situations.
Hello, it is Ryan, and we could all use an extra bright spot in our day, couldn't we? Just to make up for things like sitting in traffic, doing the dishes, counting your steps, you know, all the mundane stuff. That is why I'm such a big fan of Chumba Casino. Chumba Casino has all your favorite social casino-style games that you can play for free anytime, anywhere with daily bonuses. So sign up now at chumbacasino.com. That's chumbacasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 21 plus. Terms and conditions apply.
Child marriage often results in forced marriage, severe human rights abuses, and lifelong negative consequences for girls, including harm to their health, education, and economic opportunities. It also undermines statutory rape laws by legalizing what would otherwise be considered a sex crime. Legal loopholes like parental consent and court approval make the marriages possible. Federal law also lacks a minimum age for spousal or fiancé's visas, which further complicates the issue in an immigration setting. Advocacy groups are calling for change, including an abolishment of all legal loopholes allowing marriage before 18 at the state level, the removal of the marital exception to statutory rape laws, and establishing a minimum age of 18 for spousal or fiancé visas. The group argue legislation protecting minors from this practice would cost nothing, but would prevent the exploitation of children by sexual predators. As of June 2024, only 13 states have banned underage marriages, with no exception. Even worse, in four states where it remains legal, there is no statutory minimum age when all exemptions are taken into account: California, Mississippi, New Mexico, and Oklahoma. You can learn more and get help at unchainedatlast.org. So what do we think?
Yeah, I think it's looking back in the 1950s and 60s and 70s through a 2024 lens is certainly an exercise. And I think we get, again, it's the context, right? We're looking at cognizant of the fact that we are of a different demographic, both are by virtue of our gender, by virtue of our education, by virtue of where we're from, our socioeconomic status. So trying to understand it from where these people were coming from, I don't think at any point any of these parents were like, I am so excited that my daughter has started talking to Ken. So it's like, even though, and back then he would drive, if they were under the, in Missouri, I think it was like 14 or 15 was the age. And if they were younger than that, he would drive them to Oklahoma, where there was not and still is not an exemption for the lowest age at which you could be married, just to clarify that. If you're like 10 years old with a judge or parental consent, depending on what state you're in, you might still could get married. And that's a person, to me, a 12-year-old's not a wife, it's a sixth grader.
Yeah. No, it's sickening for sure.
Yes, and Missouri is fighting this right now. I'm not picking on Missouri. Texas, like, very only recently outlawed all underage marriage, like 2017, very recently. But I only bring this up because it was on the ballot this year in Missouri, and it was a bipartisan effort by a Republican senator and a Democratic senator. Two women came together, and one of the women, the Republican senator, had experience as a child bride. She said she was married at age 15 to a 21-year-old in 1984, and her sister at age 16 was married to a 39-year-old. And
why?
She said he was a drug dealer. It was like she has her
but
whole
the parents family. Were
look it up. Her name
hands
is Senator Holly Thompson Reeder. I think her argument is it just shouldn't be allowed. If the parents agree or we agree, or she was 16, she could do it.
No.
She said, as a child that did get married, I would have a lot more insight into this issue than there was a contingent of Republican representatives. It passed the Senate in Missouri. So just look up who your representative is in Missouri, because there were lawmakers who were like vehemently opposed to raising the marriage age to 18. And like, whose policy platform's like, I think kids should be able to get married. Like, what are you talking about? And so, again, I'm not picking on Missouri, only that this is a because California, Mississippi, New Mexico, and Oklahoma have got a little bit more to go. And I would urge anybody, whatever state or jurisdiction you're in, just see what the laws are on the book. If it's banned, good. Unchainedatlast.org has a lot of information. But it's wild that that is a 2024 argument. And that's what Senator Reeder said. Like, she was just like, this is a weird thing that we're like, why are we even arguing about this?
Yeah.
Like, we thought this was going to be a bipartisan, like, sail through. And all of a sudden, some like extremists are like, we got to protect the right to marry kids. Like, who is protecting that right? I can tell you their names. It's in articles.
Do you want
in the
my
show notes.
Answer?
What's that?
The fundamentalist and yeah, like evangelical Christians. I think if I were to look at any lawmaker and ask them, give me three good reasons why a 12-year-old should get married, and they could give any that weren't, well, the good book says it should be, so or it like, shall yeah. be done. You know, I mean, there's no like logical explanation for why a 12-year-old should be married. Like, what's your reasoning for not raising it? The only things I can think of are gross and wrong.
Yeah.
And illegal.
And it was ironic to me to be like, we don't think the government should get involved in people's personal lives. And I'm like, I just died 16 times laughing so hard at that sentence that you said. What the fuck are you talking about? The government's okay. Well, we won't get on that. But all that to say, it is wild that this is still not just in Missouri, but across the country. Only 13 states have completely banned it. So yeah, go to unchainedatlast.org and see if yours is on them. Ours barely made it just a few years ago, honestly. And it was because of women who had been put in this situation as teens, as children, wrote to the representatives and said, it is important to me that this is outlawed because I don't want girls my age that were my age when this happened to me. I don't want this happening again. So it's when we look back at all the things that Ken McElroy has done, we have, I don't know that there's like rampant cattle rustling going on or hog snatching going on. Or there's still some witness intimidation, but I don't think that you would be able to get away with it to the extent he was at this time. But yet the child marrying is still around. So,
yeah, that is interesting. It is, you would get arrested for stealing cattle in Oklahoma, but you can go marry a 15-year-old.
12-year-old, probably younger. They have no statutory minimum age when all the exemptions. So, yeah. That's wild. The things that, like you said, it's what do we feel as a society, right? If you have that like icky gut feeling that, yeah, what's your priority? And then also, okay, well, then what do we do about it now? And I'm happy to see this bipartisan effort from the senators in Missouri going, why is anybody fighting us over this? Because like, great question. And like, good for them for speaking up. And for her, that's a hard thing to share your personal experience. But what do we always say? If you're the person to whom this happened, you get to pick. So the opposing lawmaker who was like, I know somebody that got married at 15 to an older guy and they're still madly in love. What the fuck are you talking about? First of all. And second of all, you don't know that. And third of all, shut up. Ask this woman who actually lived through it and she gets to make the decision. So it's hard to see so many people in at least the first 20, 30 years of Ken McElroy's life that we've gotten to today just feel powerless, helpless, that there's no cavalry coming, that he's outside your house with a gun and no one's coming to help.
No, you have the bully, if you want to call him that, the rural terrorist, but nobody can stop him. And when he comes for you, if you can't stop him either, eventually people are going to gather together and take matters into their own hands. And that's what we will continue to see in the next episode. And also, why people continue to feel like they had consistently been let down by law enforcement. It's because they have been. Because, as you've seen, maybe he gets charged with something finally, but then nothing ever comes of it because he gets to them. And isn't it crazy that one guy is managing to intimidate hundreds of people at this point, and he's just – One man, and I say that not to like shame these people, but like how much power we can give someone just because, you know, they make themselves look big and scary and make, ironically, his victims feel inferior when that's his biggest fear, is feeling mm-hmm. inferior to somebody. But if we all realize we can all band together and take this one guy down, and by that I don't mean you have to go shoot him in his truck, or you just get together and in a peaceful way, just know that like the good outweighs the bad in most situations.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, exactly.
Band together. And say,
like, yeah, there are more of us than there are of you, and like we're not going to let that let us all live in fear forever. But they sure lived in fear for a very, very long time,
yeah.
A time that we'll discuss in part two. The, like I said, he starts pulling the trigger even more in part two. So
yeah,
stay
it doesn't
tuned
get
for that.
Better. We'll just say that it just lasts longer.
I was going to say there's fewer child marriages. There's still one more, but that's at least there's only one more.
No, it's a doozy.
It's never
of a
good.
One, though.
Yeah, it's never good.
One, even one is too many, and he's on, I've lost count of
37.
How many.
Yeah.
And these, just the wives, the girls that he raped, or, we may not
scores.
Even know the full told amount of that.
In the book, McLean was like, oh, I had talked to people who were like, oh, you heard about so-and-so in this town, and so-and-so in this town, and this person in this town. Because he wasn't just staying in Skidmore. He was all over the place. So yeah, so his path of destruction was concentrated in Skidmore and St. Joe, but and Maryville, but extended into Iowa, into Nebraska, down to Kansas, down to Oklahoma. He was a rural terrorist wherever he mm-hmm. could get away with it. So we'll continue his reign of terror in part two.
If you like our free episodes, you'll love our Patreon bonus content. You can join for free to see what we're up to next, or dive into over 900 hours of content like Judge Christie, Dear Sinister, True Crime Headlines, a ton of Reddit segments, Heather's Saves. We got all sorts of bits we like to do over there on Patreon.
And if you're not sure if you want to check them out, you can always sign up for free, like Christy said, to see what we're up to next. And you get a Patreon bonus content from the archives totally for free just for signing up for that. Or do the free trial where you join for a week, check out all the perks, and then cancel anytime before the trial is over without getting charged. So if you're like, ooh, that mini-sode sounds cool, or like, ooh, that I want to go look at that Q&A they just posted a clip of, you can do that or wait until we have a Q&A and even do that. Mm-hmm. And then as long as you cancel before the week, you don't get charged, or stick around, do an annual membership, and you get a month free.
You also get ad-free episodes, monthly live stream Q&As, quarterly live bonus content, weekly audio bonus content, monthly mini-sodes, merch discounts, and a community of the best listeners on the whole internet. And for recent patrons, thank you so much for supporting the show, and make sure you stick around after our sign-offs to hear your shout-out.
Head over to sinisterhood.com and click shop on the top banner to check out merch like t-shirts, mugs, tote stickers, and even clothes for your kiddos. Check out the pinned post on Patreon to make sure to get your merch discount.
While you're on our website, you can also review the show, follow us on socials, and check out the episode description for sources used during our research. You'll also find fun things like topic-based playlists and links to live show tickets for all the full moon energy shows. Get them now. They're going hot.
Get them now.
That's not an expression, but it is now. It's going. They're going hot and fast.
Get them hot. They're going like fast cakes. We'll be in San Diego September 17th, Phoenix September 18th, Las Vegas September 19th. And do not miss our final show of the Full Moon Energy Tour on October 17th, The Hunter Full Moon in Dallas. You can follow us on Instagram and Threads at Sinisterhood Pod. Like us on Facebook at Sinisterhood. Watch full video episodes of the show on our YouTube channel, even though they're early and ad-free on Patreon. And you can check out clips of the show and from our Freaky Friday segments over on TikTok. And don't forget to go to cameo.com to order your custom video shout out to have us deliver a message to you or someone you love in your life. It could be a Sinisterhood fan that's celebrating a birthday or a milestone, or you're going through something. You're getting married. You're getting a divorce. You are starting a new job. You think you want to quit your job. We love to do a pep talk, advice cameos, anything like that. So cameo.com, search Sinisterhood. Where are you at on the computer?
I am on Instagram and Threads at Christy M. Wallace and TikTok at Christy or GTFO. Heather?
I'm on the computer at Heather versus the World.
As always, the devil rules the airwaves.
Keep it creepy. Everybody, thank you so much for supporting the show on Patreon. Here are your special Patreon shoutouts: Chelsea Hawkins,
Cliff Allen,
Will Brewer,
Allie,
Ashley Robertson,
Bree Harris,
Crystal Wilkes,
Lauren Hollowell,
Darth Cass,
AJ,
Patricia Hobson,
Sydney Pacha,
Tara,
Bailey McEwen,
Mackenzie McLaughlin,
and Taylor Richardson. Thank you so much for supporting the show. We could not do this without you. We sincerely appreciate each and every one of you. We hope we pronounced your names correctly. Stay safe, stay healthy, and keep it creepy.
Mwah-ha-ha-ha.
Sinister.
Life with CIDP can be tough, but the Thrive Team, a specialized squad of experts, helps people living with CIDP make more room in their lives for joy. Watch Rare, Well Done.
An all-new reality series, Rare, Well Done, offers help and hope to people across the country who live with the rare disease CIDP. Watch the latest episode now, exclusively on RareWellDone.com.
It is Ryan Seacrest here. There was a recent social media trend which consisted of flying on a plane with no music, no movies, no entertainment. But a better trend would be going to ChumbaCasino.com. It's like having a mini social casino in your pocket. Chumba Casino has over 100 online casino-style games, all absolutely free. It's the most fun you can have online and on a plane. So grab your free welcome bonus now at ChumbaCasino.com. Sponsored by Chumba Casino.
No